This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on your flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. News Talk Radio WOKV. To join Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, and Vic Ketchman, dial 355-NFL-1. That's 355-6351. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Jaguars This Week is brought to you in part by Prudential Network Realty, Ticket Exchange, and by the Jacksonville Transportation Group. Now, here's the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
Good evening and welcome to Jaguars This Week, final one of the 2009 calendar year. Brian Sexton joined by Jeff Lagerman. Joe Fortunato is here. No Vic Ketchman. Again, if you follow us at all, either on the radio or through Jaguars.com, you know that Vic suffered a mild heart attack last Friday, has been in the hospital, and we've sent him home. Quite frankly, we don't even want to see him here until he is 100% back on his feet. You know, that's not really what he wants to do, don't you?
No, I mean, that's just not in Vic. You know, he's a grinder.
Yep, he wants to be here.
He's like a, how should I say this? He's like an NFL coach that just can't leave it alone. You know, like an Andy Reid. Like a Tom Coughlin.
About to go to Coughlin.
I mean, one of those guys that just has to grind, and that's who he is. And we wish him well. I went and saw him yesterday, and boy, he couldn't wait to show me his new haircut. And that's kind of an inside joke, which is kind of strange. and visited with him for a while. He had some stents put in. Talked to him again this morning, and typical Vic, he didn't even know who he was on the phone with until, I guess, later this afternoon when Ryan happened to tell him that. By the way, that was Jeff that called when you were leaving the hospital. You know Vic.
Yeah, I do.
So he had some more stents put in, and he's home resting and hopefully resting, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, we wanted him to call this evening, but to be honest with you, he just needs to get his rest. And he's not going to make the trip to Cleveland with us. May not be back for a couple of weeks, but when he is, we'll be happy to have him back and healthy. So we'll go 2 hours tonight. Joe Fortunato is here. The folks from the Uptown Market have fed you, Loggy. Are you happy?
Outstanding. You know what? I haven't had shepherd's pie in so long. And, in fact, they brought two chicken dishes, and then they brought two shepherd's pie dishes. Gene Smith was in here doing his pregame thing. He grabbed the shepherd's pie. I grabbed the other one, and Joe and you have got the chickens.
He looked excited about it.
And the cookies are, I mean, I just scarfed one down, and I can't wait till we go to a break. I'm going to get another.
By the way, if you're around, try the Uptown Market, which is actually downtown here. And if you're coming to the Gator Bowl on Friday, they've got a restaurant here. The El Gato Grande is also their joint here at the stadium, and they're getting ready for a big crowd.
So, what would be better on a cold day, because it looks like it's going to be pretty cold for that bowl game?
Friday, yeah, it's looking in the 50s.
Oh, shepherd's pie on a cold day? Shepherd's pie in a hot cup of cocoa or a little warmed-up brandy.
You got some pep in your step here this evening with the shepherd's pie.
I love it.
Glad to have it. All right, 355-NFL-1, 800-355-NFL-1. At some point here in the first hour, we expect to be joined by Maurice Drew. Quarter after. Okay, so after the break, we'll be joined by Maurice. We'll talk to him about the Pro Bowl, about the three-game losing streak, about ending the season in the home of a famous running back, Jim Brown, up in Cleveland. Neil Brown will probably be there. He generally is.
Yeah, he's kind of always around.
Yeah. I remember a couple years ago when we were there in 2005, I was standing there talking to him, and here comes Fred Taylor all the way across the field. Mm-hmm. He and Fred had gotten to know each other at an event in South Florida, and after that, I mean, everybody was coming over to see the
game. I'm looking forward to going to the new Cleveland Stadium. I have not been there yet.
You were with us there in 2005.
Was I?
Yeah.
Gosh, too many hits in the head.
I was just about to say, well, hold on a sec. Yeah. Yeah, we were there in 2005. Remember, that was the game that Kyle Brady and George
I do remember now.
Had the orchestrated little touchdown dance where he threw the ball at Ozzie Newsome.
And you know what? The field is still terrible. I mean, they went and spent all that money on a new stadium, and it's still a terrible field as far as playing surface.
Because it's below
some things
the level
don't
of
change.
Lake.
Yeah, but bring in some dirt, will you? Maybe a drainage
higher.
System.
And it's still real grass. They do not, like the folks in Foxborough, have the field turf.
Yeah, and they actually, watching the Oakland Raiders play at Cleveland last Sunday on the film today, they have re-sodded the entire field from outside the hashes, maybe 5 yards, the entire length of the field, and people were slipping everywhere on it.
So it better be frozen is what you're saying, otherwise it's going to be slippery.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be frozen. I don't know if it's at one of those fields, because sometimes in cold weather places like that, like in Green Bay, they have that heater thing kind of built into the field. Do they have one in Cleveland? I don't know.
Not that I know of. Here, I'm calling up the forecast for Cleveland for the weekend. Here's the deal.
It's about 5
degrees. Except that Green Bay doesn't turn that heater on for the opposing sides.
Here's the story.
True.
Saturday, snow showers likely, cloudy, blustery, a high near 24. Saturday night, snow showers likely, cloudy with a low around 18.
You Sunday, got a wind chill there?
I do not. Snow showers likely, cloudy with a high near 21. I don't have the real feel on that. I'll have to go and look at another website for that one. But it's going to be cold.
Coldest game of the year.
It's going to be a day in which you would think that both teams would just run the ball.
Well, that's what Cleveland does anyway.
Well, this team does.
Their quarterback's terrible. Derek Anderson is, what is his rating, 41?
Yeah, 41. He's got 3 touchdowns and 9 interceptions.
And in the last 3 games, you know, everybody's talking about this new running back,
Jerome Harrison,
that everybody's raving about. Set a Cleveland Browns franchise record last week.
2 weeks ago with 39?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
Against Kansas City.
For how many rushes?
39 rushing attempts.
39 rushing attempts, and the reason they're doing that is because the quarterback plays bad. You know, and that's what they're going to do. I mean, there's, and I think that they've finally understood that the quarterback play is not going to get any better. They tried to fix it all year long with Brady Quinn and Derek Anderson, and who are they going to play? It's just not going to happen. So they're doing like smart coaches should do, and that's playing to their strengths. And their strengths is they got a very good offensive line, particularly on the left side. On the right side, they're still good, but they run the ball very well. They are actually playing good defense of late. They're not
great.
Even without
Sean Rogers.
Even without Sean Rogers, the backup that is playing for him, which, correct me if I'm wrong, Atiba Rubin.
Rubin.
And he's taking the place of Sean Rogers. And he's not a bad football player, but the real talent, they run that 3-4. The real talent is at the linebacking position because they have a lot of guys that have talent. Cameron Wembley's pretty good. David Bowens is very good, and he actually used to play outside. Now he's playing inside. Matt Roth, who they got off of waivers, and boy, do I wish the Jaguars were able to get him. This guy can play. He can still play.
What, 4 sacks in the 5 games? He's
4 sacks in 5 games, and he's the one who is impacting the passer for Cleveland the most. I mean, how crazy is that, that a team's able to get a player off of waivers to be their dominant pass rusher midway in this into the season?
Well, it tells you what they must have had down in South Florida.
And the Jaguars put a claim in for him. They just didn't get him.
Well, because Cleveland finished in the top.
Oh, yeah, Cleveland was way up on the pecking order, so obviously they were awarded him. But Matt Ross is going to be a free agent after this year.
Maybe one of those few pass rushers that get to the market.
Well, maybe. I mean, if I'm him with all the unknown things going on with Cleveland, obviously Eric Mangini, Mike Holmgren, that's the storyline in Cleveland right now. It's not about the football team.
Right.
It's about Mike Holmgren and Eric Mangini's future. But will Matt Roth decide to stay with a franchise that may be undergoing some change?
He's a Midwestern guy from Illinois.
Iowa guy.
If the money is written.
An Iowa Hawkeye. I don't know where he grew up, but he's a
Illinois.
Hawkeye.
Yeah, so Illinois, Iowa, Ohio. That's his neck of the woods. Real quick, here's the weather with the wind chill. Saturday, high of 25, real feel, 7 degrees. Saturday night, real feel, minus 5. Sunday, real feel, minus 3. Going to be cold. Hard to throw the ball. Let's take a break. We'll come back. More to come. Jaguars This Week continues after this. Welcome back. Jaguars This Week rolls along here on Wednesday night, the 30th. Of January. Happy year, January. Of December. Thinking about January already. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, Jaguars This Week. Joe Fortunato's here. Come on, Ryan. Put on the headset. You've been filling in for Vic. You might as well be here. Maurice Drew joins us now. Pro Bowler. Congratulations, Maurice.
Thank you very much. I appreciate how you guys doing.
Good.
Doing good. The only thing about the Pro Bowl this year, are you a little disappointed that you don't get to go to Hawaii?
Yeah, I guess for the older guys, it's a little disappointment. But for me, just going is it's very exciting, you know. Only thing that's kind of bittersweet about it is, you know, we had an opportunity to make the playoffs and we didn't make it. But it's still exciting to get recognized and to be, you know, be able to play with some of the leaders of the league.
And for those that don't know, Montel Owens, Maurice, was a, and I'm sure you know this, was a first alternate at special teams. And that's a position that only has one player per conference named to that Pro Bowl roster. That's a heck of an accomplishment for him as well.
Oh, definitely. You know, I think, tell you the truth, man, I feel real bad for Montel because he is the best special teams player in the league by far. You know, he leads the league in tackles for special teamers. He's always disturbing, always around the ball, always making plays. And, you know, it's kind of tough when we're out here and we don't get that much national TV, but he definitely shows his promise and why he's one of the best special teamers out there. I mean, just look at the big hit against Miami to start the game. He ran right through Ted Ginn.
Oh, great hit.
So, you know, he always starts the tempo of the game, and he's always, you know, at a high level, playing at a high level. So Montel definitely deserves it. Right now, the only way he gets in is if San Diego makes the Super Bowl. So hopefully, we'll be rooting for them.
And let me explain that, because San Diego has the special teams Pro Bowler, and the Super Bowl is actually the weekend after the Pro Bowl this year, so they're changing things up a little bit. All right, most people that go to the Pro Bowl, they like to take, you know, people, whether it be family or friends. Sometimes it's a teammate. Sometimes it's an offensive line. Being that the Pro Bowl's in South Florida, are you going to, you know, pack up the bus and bring the O-line with you?
Oh, yeah. I was going to bring them regardless if it was in Hawaii or wherever else. You know, without those guys, everything I've done wouldn't be possible. So I definitely want to show those guys my appreciation. And they've been working hard. They don't get a lot of credit, but they deserve it. So the whole line, Mercedes is an alternate too, but if he doesn't get to go, I'll definitely be bringing him. Greg Jones, Brock Montel, who's also blocked. So I'm definitely, it's going to be a nice trip for us.
It sounds like there's a list. Where do we get on it?
We've
been talking about you all
actually.
Year long.
No. It's for the guy. You know, tell you the truth, those guys are best of their bets for me, you know, this whole year. And for them not to get any recognition is kind of just tough on. I really didn't like that. So I'm doing my best to help them.
Hey, real cool question here, because to me that this everybody likes to know the inside scoop. How long did it take Fred to text you or call you after the information was put out?
He texted me before, actually. He was like, I know you made it, so I want to text you now and let you know before you get swamped. And I was like, oh, man, I appreciate it. You know, hope it's true.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, no, it's true. So, you know, Fred, I talked to him after the game. He is actually sending me the jersey he wore out there. So I'll get the New England 21 jersey. I have it framed and up in my game room.
Hey, are you you watching the Roadies Humanitarian Bowl?
Nope, I'm done with bowl games right now for a little bit after going out there watching UCLA in that 25 degree weather. I'm a little tired of bowl games for a little bit.
All right, so this weekend, speaking of weather, you go to Cleveland, which has a heritage for great running backs, Marion Motley, Ernie Davis, Jim Brown, on a typical Cleveland January day, cold, snowy, and it's going to be about you and your buddy, Harrison, running against each other, because
yeah,
it's not going to be an easy day to throw. Who wins?
You know, it's going to be definitely be a tough game. I think if we execute and we'll give ourselves a great opportunity. You know, if we do the fundamentals and we execute, we'll give ourselves a great opportunity to come out successful.
No, I mean you and Harrison. Who has more yards?
Who wins for yards?
Yeah.
I hope our defense. You know, they're real particular about stopping other running backs. So. You know, I don't know. We'll find out at the end of the game. I don't like to predict things.
Let me also congratulate you also, because there was another honor that was, I guess, put out today, wasn't it, Ryan?
Yeah, Man of the Year.
The NFL's Walter Payton Man of the Year. Every team has one. Congratulations to you. You're the Jaguars NFL Walter Payton Man of the Year.
Oh, that's a bigger, I think, for me, is a bigger accomplishment, just because growing up where I was in the Bay Area, a single parent, I watched my mother, you know, work 2-3 jobs, and to go out and be able to change lives of kids and be recognized for that, just a simple saying hello, a simple, you know, shaking their hand, speaking with them about life and how are things going. I think that means more to me than, you know, being recognized on the field for what we're doing with our God-given ability to go out there and change someone's life. Maybe talk to a kid who might cure cancer one day and keep him on the right track or her on the right track. I think that's more important than, you know, some of the things we do on the field.
So how disappointing Maurice, for you, has the last 3 weeks been? I mean, you've had games against, you know, Miami, Indianapolis, New England, where you've had a chance to keep those playoff hopes on the front burner, to stay in the driver's seat against Miami. Got to be hard to take.
Very frustrating, you know. I guess that's just part of the process. You know, obviously a lot of people didn't have us up to be in the situation in the first place, but for us to go out and play like we've been playing throughout the year and then come to the end where things really matter, I think we kind of overlooked the little things. And that's just fundamental football, just going out there, running, blocking, tackling, whatever it was. We just the fundamentals, we kind of got away from thinking about the big picture. And so, you know, it's just a lesson to be learned. You know, you can't do that. We definitely have to go in there. It's not like we're overlooking teams or anything like that, but you look at the picture, like we win, we made it to the playoffs, and everybody was talking about the playoffs, and everybody was doing well, and everybody wanted to be around the Jaguars. And that's just part of, you know, handling success. And I think as a team, we're going to learn that, and we're going to understand that winning is a lifestyle. It's not something you do. It's who you are. If you're a winner, you're a winner all the time. You know, the way you carry yourself off the field, the way, you know, you come in on Tuesdays and you're winning in the film room. If it's getting treatment, you're just always thinking about winning. Whatever you're doing has to do with winning. And so once we're able to breed that lifestyle, which I think we are, and it's going to take time. And once you learn to breed that lifestyle, you know, that's why some of these great teams continue to go to the playoffs year after year after year.
So since you say winning and having that winning mentality, how important then is 8-8 compared to 7-9?
Very important. You know, I stated earlier that, you know, I guess early in the year, they're talking about it's a rebuilding year, you know, where, you know, no one expects you guys to win more than this many games. And to me, that's a slap in the face because I'm not rebuilding anything. You know, I think that we're all winners, you know, and if we're going to play this game, you play to win. You don't play this to be okay and be average. You play to win. So that's just my attitude on it, and I guess I get a little frustrated, a little upset when people say, oh, you guys are just going to rebuild just because, you know, we have a lot of young players. No, we're all paid to play to win, and that, at the end of the day, that's what you want to do.
Go ahead. I was just saying, go ahead with your final sentence. I've got something to ask you after that.
Oh, okay. Oh, no, but that's just how I feel. You know, I feel like we have to take that mentality and run with it. You can't, you know, put it this way. When Eugene and Evan were out there, we didn't give them any excuses. We didn't allow them to make excuses because excuses aren't a part of our game. You mess up, you correct, and you go out there and play. Same with myself, same with whoever else was out there playing. You don't make any mistakes, and if you do, you know, you owe us. You don't make it again. And so I think that's just the mindset that we have to have.
Okay, you're either going to win 2 more games than last year or 3 more games than last year's team, but it doesn't feel like it's just 2 or 3 more. It feels more than that. It feels like you guys won more this year than you did last year. Agree with that? Because the entire mindset's different.
I mean, right, and 5-11 is real tough. I'm not even going to lie to you. That's one of the toughest things I've ever gone through just because I hate losing, and then to be a part of that just made things that much more worse. So it definitely feels like we've done a lot more, but there's more that we can do.
All right, Maurice, last question here. I know we're getting close to a break. First year being the feature guy, as Jack Del Rio said, you know, the bell cow, whatever you want to call it. How is your body held up, and what has surprised you about being the man this year?
Well, my body's held up pretty well, actually, this year. The thing what surprised me was, I guess the losing made it worse, just because when we were losing, you know, my body was hurting a little bit more. I banged my knee up pretty good, and so I was a little upset about some things. But, you know, just a little bit of winning that we have been doing and some of the things we've been doing, I feel great. You know, I when you have an opportunity, and we still have an opportunity, you're going to do your best to feel great, to play the game. And so that's what we've been doing. That's what I've been doing so far. It's feeling good, enjoying life, having a good time with the guys that I play with, and I'll just try to do my best to keep it going.
Appreciate it, Maurice. Congratulations again on both honors today.
No problem, guys. I'm glad to talk to you after this again.
You got it. We'll catch you in the offseason for sure.
All right. See you guys later.
All right, Maurice. Congrats.
That's Pro Bowler Maurice Drew. Also, Jaguars NFL Walter Payton Man of the Year.
A great guy.
You couldn't ask for a better player to build your team around than Maurice Drew. Would you have liked to have played with him?
He would be the perfect teammate, you know, a supreme competitor, but at the same time an unselfish one, and sometimes those two don't go together.
This portion of Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Best Buy. Remember, stop by the brand new Best Buy in the St. John's Town Center. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggam, and Joe Fortunato. Sans Vic this evening. Hope to have him back as soon as he is up on his feet and feeling much closer to 100%. For now, we'll go to the phones. They're starting to light up. 355-NFL1, 800-355-NFL1. Again, thank you to Maurice Drew for joining us in the last segment talking about his election to the Pro Bowl and as the NFL, the Jaguars, Walter Payton.
He's well-deserved, both honors. Just like with when Fred Taylor had a couple years where he was really close, but ended up disappointed. There is Thomas Jones for the New York Jets who's sitting there going, man.
What do I have to do?
Yeah.
What do I have to do?
And that's the way it is. You know, and I think Maurice had the edge on him because he was leading the league in touchdowns. He's not anymore.
He's one behind Adrian Peterson.
But certainly well-deserved for him. And the best part about making it early is that once you get recognized as a Pro Bowler, it's easier to make it in the future.
Even for running backs, where they just
for anybody.
Seem to strictly look at numbers?
For anybody, just because it's a name thing. And Maurice will always be, I don't want to say always. For the most part, he will always get a lot of fan vote because he's a fantasy machine.
Right.
I'm not a fantasy player, but, I mean, I understand what he means to people that have him on his fantasy.
Touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, anytime a fantasy player, I mean, that just gives you more exposure.
His 56 touchdowns in his first 4 years.
It's amazing.
Yeah, one more ties him for fourth most by a player in his first 3 or 4 years. So, I mean, the guy is right at the top of his game. Grab a phone call here from the South Side. Bill joins us. Hello, Bill. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. That was an excellent interview. I liked what he said about being a winner. Either you're a winner or you're not, and he certainly is on and off the field.
No, you're right. When you're building a franchise, and you know what, there was a lot of folks who, including me, thought, hey, Fred can still play. You know, what's the hurry? I give Gene Smith credit. I mean, a bold move, letting Fred Taylor go, and then making Maurice Drew the feature guy. I mean, to me, that's vision. And more importantly, because he now became or is kind of the leader in the locker room.
And that's the thing I asked Jack about on his show last night. And Gene,
not that Fred couldn't, lead.
But you know that Maurice wouldn't take his natural position as a leader around anybody that he's around as long as Fred was there.
No, and it's just the way it is.
He was going to be second fiddle and self-imposed.
You got to be the guy. You know, a couple things have to be there to be a leader. One, performance. And number two, you got to be the guy. Those are the greatest leaders.
Right.
You can have a second team player or a first team, marginal player, but he's giving you everything he's got, and he can be a leader, but the great leaders are the ones that are great players to boot.
In a sense, that's also one of his great qualities, because for as great a player as he is, he was able to subjugate his own ego for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
He never allowed it to become an issue between he and Fred. Look at how
he wanted the ball more. And then there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, just like a lot of people talked about Mike Sims Walker's comments, Bill, after the game this past weekend, what do I got to do to get the ball more? Whatever it was that he said. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that because it means that the guy's a competitor and he believes that he can help make a difference in winning and losing. And to me, that's okay.
355-NFL1.
Did Bill have another question?
I don't think he did, but turn that up. Let's see if Bill is still with us.
Yeah, I'm still with you.
Great,
can I
Bill,
ask a couple questions?
You may.
Thank you. About the game coming up, you say it's going to be on the ground. Why don't we do a lot of these short passes like Brady did and tore us up with them? And then another question I have is, why in the world does Miami Super Bowl and the Pro Bowl in the same year instead of spreading the wealth around?
You mean in the same city?
I'll take it off the air.
All right, well, I'll give you the second one first. The reason that they moved it from Hawaii to Miami was to try to create more interest in it. It's way out there in Hawaii, and the players love to go out, and the network likes to go out, but no one seems to pay any attention to it whatsoever. So they were hoping that by playing it the week between the championship games and the Super Bowl, in the sight of the Super Bowl, they would be able to take advantage of a built-in crowd. Obviously, South Florida has a whole lot more people than Honolulu, and a lot more people can get there than would take the trip all the way to Honolulu. They're trying to recreate some interest in a game that doesn't generate much.
I like the idea of having the Pro Bowl in that open weekend prior to the Super Bowl, and the reason is this, is that, first of all, it's fantastic for the host city.
Right.
Because let's face it, when the Super Bowl is played, a lot of people don't come until it's that week. And what this does is it gives that city 2 weeks of full hotel rooms, 2 weeks of attractions, and to me, it's brilliant. I think they ought to keep it that way every year. The only thing that you won't get, typically the teams that are in the championship games and in the Super Bowl, they have a whole horde of Pro Bowl players.
Absolutely.
So something to watch in that, you know, if you're an alternate, if the format stays like what it is, boy, are there going to be a lot more players playing in the Pro Bowl because there will be many that can't play in it because they're playing in the Super Bowl.
I don't know that it's going to stay that way. In fact, I think they're already talking about renewing
the contract
back to with Hawaii. So.
Pro Bowl's boring to watch.
Exactly. And that's why they're trying to do something different. Now, his other question was, why wouldn't you throw the ball more? My simple answer would be it's going to feel about 50 degrees colder
with
wind and snow than it did last week in New England.
And he also talked about you know, why not more shorter passes and stuff. Hey, look, there was nothing wrong with the passes that they threw in New England. The only thing that I saw that was wrong with New England, for one, I thought it was a terrible decision to go for it on 4th and 1. Even though it was like 4th and a foot, maybe 6 inches. And then the interception that David threw to Mercedes, I mean, it was not a good throw.
Did you hear Jack's explanation on his show by any chance last night or through the media?
No.
He said it was a no-brainer. He'd do it again. He would change the play this time. But his response, his reasoning was that he believed that the Jaguars could not win by allowing the Patriots to have too many possessions, and he wanted to steal a possession.
Well, and I understand that thinking, but at the same time, you also have to go, well, if we don't make it, you have to consider that, then we're giving Tom Brady the ball at the 35.
You saw that. I did Vic show on Monday.
Yeah.
And Joe read the cards. He did such a great job, I thought he should do it on all shows.
Absolutely.
You?
Go ahead, Joe.
I mean, you sound like
Don
Pardo.
What's his gig pay?
You're the Don Pardo. It pays dinner. Did you enjoy dinner from Uptown Market?
Always delicious.
I'll get you a breath mint on the plane. How about that?
Thanks, pal.
So generous.
Kick your butt in Tiger Woods. Nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. Got a phone call just now from a guy named Steven, who called last night during
Jack's show.
Steve
from Pontevedra.
And I didn't put him on last night because I didn't think the coach was going to answer the question anyway. But the question was, and he kind of thinks, I think I got off the wrong foot with him here.
You?
He thinks I think his question was asinine.
Did you?
I don't.
No.
I don't. Here's the question.
You just thought he was.
I'll ask. No, I didn't think.
Well, that's
he
what
was
you
asinine.
Just told us during the break.
Oh,
I'm just kidding, Steve.
Whatever.
Well, you were yelling at him. I mean, you were giving to him pretty good. I could hear you while we were talking.
He wants to know.
To the other caller.
He wants to know.
I don't think you came over the air, though, so don't worry.
If the Jaguars should have practiced. Why didn't they practice last Friday?
Well, here's the reason, was that the Jaguars had the extra days off from the Indianapolis game. They had 10 days between games. So they set up their normal work week, okay, so that Thursday, which was Christmas Eve, was Friday in their week. And then you skip over Friday, you get Saturday. Saturday's the normal Saturday. So for Jack Del Rio and his staff, they got in the same amount of work that they would get.
And more.
And more, because they had the extra time over the weekend for them to be able to prepare. So they didn't do anything less than they would normally do for an opponent. Okay? Now, you can make the case, well, you got beat 35-7.
Yeah, they
maybe
probably
should have practiced.
Well, yes, without knowing the final outcome of the game, should they have practiced?
Well, I think I would have. I mean, it's pro football. You do that. You practice on Thanksgiving. You practice on Christmas Eve. I think I would have, because You're going against Tom Brady, for goodness sakes. Don't you think you need a little bit more
practice?
Right.
Christmas and New Year, double week. Same exact thing. Are they going to practice this Friday?
Oh, yeah, they're going to practice on Friday.
Because they lost?
Well, because they played on Sunday.
Because Stephen called.
No, but they played on Sunday. See, I mean, it's not like they played on Christmas Eve and then have
Thursday.
That much.
Right,
so it's a little bit different. Can you make the case? Yeah. Look, it's 2 years in a row that they had that Thursday night game against the Colts that gave them Christmas Day off. And 2 years in a row, they lost the game.
Yeah, and
you can make the case.
And I understand, you know, why they did it, and I'm glad that the coaches got a day off on Christmas. Just because, I mean, these coaches, folks, I mean, they work their hind ends off. And I'd ask Mark Dufferin when's the last time he'd had Christmas Day off. I mean, Mark Dufferin's been coaching for a long time. He's a head coach at Maryland and Cincinnati. He's been everywhere. And he said he couldn't remember the last Christmas Day off that he had. The reason I would have liked to have seen them practice on Christmas is that because they didn't, then you didn't have a practice on Friday and really on Saturday, because Saturday's a walkthrough, and so it had been about 3 days since you had a practice. But would that have made a difference? I don't know. I mean, you look at the results now, and in hindsight, it's always 20-20.
But if you're thinking they didn't get enough work in, you're incorrect, because
they got the same if not more.
Right.
So,
because they had the weekend.
Anyway.
They adjusted their schedule to it, Stephen. You can make the case, obviously, and the result would certainly lead you to believe that they should have. We'll leave it up to you to decide what you think they should have done. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Lucas is in Gainesville. Lucas, welcome to the show.
How we doing, guys?
We're doing great, man. How are you? Happy New Year.
I'm doing all right. Thank you. I mean, I got two questions, I guess you could say. First one would be, if you're the Jaguars, since I think they're basically guaranteed to be going after a quarterback next year, do you give Luke McCown a few reps in the game to see what you have there?
Now, stop there before you go to your next question. Let me answer that. No. And the reason I say no is because everything that Luke McCown has shown you so far, he hasn't shown you enough to say he has earned those reps. In other words, to me, he's not going to do better than David. And most importantly, you still have, even though it's just a teeny chance of getting a playoff, you still have that teeny chance.
You know, it's there.
Okay, still got it there.
So you're saying I've got a chance.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, but you still got it.
Yep.
And along those lines, Jaguars have a lot of players that are hurt. Typically, in most years, when they're out of the playoffs, what would you see happen to those players?
They would go to injured
reserve. Injured reserve, and you sign more players, you get more players going in the offseason. Gene Smith is not giving up hope when you got that chance, nor should he. So that's kind of what's going on there.
Now, real quick, before I want to handle the Jaguars are almost guaranteed to be going after a quarterback, because I made the comment to one of the scouts who was walking through the hallway the other day, and I got onto the issue of quarterback and drafting a young quarterback, and the first round's going to have a couple of potential quarterbacks, and that scout reminded me that's not the way that Gene Smith does business. If when they get to their position, wherever it is that they're drafting, and the best available player is a safety, they're going for it. If it's an offensive lineman, hey, he told me today that Eben Britton could play center. He's that convinced Eben could play any position. Best position is right tackle. Mm-hmm. So what he's saying is if the best player on the board's a right tackle, he's taking him. And mm-hmm. Eben Britton can help this team in another capacity.
Bring Lucas back up, Joe.
Hey.
Right, okay, there you go, Lucas. So anyway, the quarterback's not a guarantee.
Well, and let me add this to it, Lucas. Okay, then you can ask your next question. When do you try to replace David Garrard? Tomorrow.
No.
You're missing my point. You try to replace David as soon as possible. Okay. Why? Because if you can get better at any position, you get better at any position. You understand what I'm saying there?
Yeah, but I think if you look at all the good winning teams and all the teams that are, you know, going to the playoffs and the teams that are putting up a bunch of points, they all seem to have a really good quarterback.
Right. But how many times did they try to get one before they got one? That's my point. I mean, they don't just grow on trees. You know what I mean? I mean, if you can get somebody better, you take them. But the problem is that the good Lord only made so many good quarterbacks. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, if you can replace Gene Smith and get somebody better in personnel, you replace them. If you can get somebody better than me in this position of being led, by all means, get them. I mean, that's the nature of the business.
Well, I mean, if you look at Green Bay, they had Brett Favre and they had Aaron Rodgers, and you look at San Diego, they had Drew Brees and then they had Phillip Rivers.
Right.
Those are two teams that have been able to put up pretty consistent, good quarterbacks.
No question. No question. And they made a major mistake by drafting Byron Leftwich, number one.
Exactly.
And number two, by not trying to add to that position since that point.
It's the last quarterback they drafted.
And they know that. Trust me.
I agree.
Trust me, they know that. So for all the people that are calling for Garrard's head and boy, we got to get a different quarterback, hey, when they find one better, they're going to get one better.
I don't want him to leave. I mean, I think you got to put a guy behind him and let him develop.
Hey, I'm saying if you can get somebody better, get somebody better.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it should be. I mean, the NFL is a cruel business, and that's the way it's got to be. As soon as you can replace somebody, you replace them and get somebody better.
And, Lucas, we have got to break for news here at the top of the hour. If you want to call back, we'll put you on right out of the gate with your second question. Or if you want to just hang on the line, you're free to do that as well. Hour number one in the books. Hour number two coming up after news here at the top of the hour on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Portion of Jaguars this week is brought to you by North Florida's labor union. A job done on time and on budget. That's the union way, boys.
Very
good
nice.
To see you,
John.
Very nice read.
Or I should say Don Pardo.
Oh, boy, to have his voice, wouldn't that be cool?
Just a harmonizer away, baby. Joe Fortunato joining us this evening. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, Vic Ketchman still recuperating. I'm assuming that most of you being Jaguars fans have heard that Vic suffered a mild heart attack last week. Has had a couple of stints put in. He's doing really well. Doing better, let's put it that way. And we obviously would love to have him here, but he's not. And we don't want him here until he's full strength. So we're going on without him. You look like you
I'm just
kind of
smiling just because, you know, Vic will never change.
No, he hasn't in 15, almost 16 years.
I mean, he is what he is.
You saw him yesterday.
I saw him yesterday.
Right. And I saw him Monday. He did the same thing to me. He's like, here, look at this. Bang, drops his pants. I'm like, all right, I don't want to.
Now you know why I didn't go over there. What had nothing to do with that nonsense.
Well, it's just kind of give people an idea what we're talking about without getting too graphic here. You know,
I don't think you can.
Well, when they put stents in, they go up through the groin.
Yeah, that's pleasant.
And so they've had to, you know, remove obstructions in that area, hair, et cetera. And Vic was, he was funny. Just
I would leave it right there. I don't think you can get any more descriptive than that. All right, 355-NFL-1. We've had plenty of calls, and we'll welcome yours as well. 355-6351. Lucas did hold through the break with his second question. He called from Gainesville in the first hour, and he is first up in hour number two. The floor is yours again, Lucas.
All righty. Mauricio is a great running back. He's a great guy. With the way, I forget which week it was. I think it was after Seattle. When he called out the coaches, basically, and said that they didn't give him enough touches. And all throughout the year, I've been to every game. I've watched every game. I'd say the offensive play call has been kind of questionable. So with that said, do you think we could possibly be seeing a new offensive coordinator since Charlie Weiss is available? He did good in New England. I'm sure there's some other guys out there on the market. I'm not really too sure how much faith I have in Dirk, you know?
I think play calling is an easy place to go.
Can I read a couple numbers
for criticism?
Quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. In 2007, his first season with the Jaguars, Dirk Cutter directed a record-breaking season. If you remember 2007.
For the Jaguars.
411 points, the most the Jaguars had ever scored in a 16-game season. They averaged 26 points per game. They scored 50 touchdowns, the most they'd ever scored in a single season. They had 28 touchdown passes, the most that had ever been thrown for in a single season in Jaguars history, and they averaged a franchise-best 5.6 yards per play. Is it players or plays?
Well, you know, everybody's got an opinion, and behind the head coach, the offensive coordinator, is always the one who's going to receive the most criticism. That's just the way it is. But, you know, hey, look, I really believe for what Dirk Cutter has had to work with, especially in the passing game, you know, with Reggie and Matt, and then you had Jerry Porter, and really – Dirk didn't go out and get those guys. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, I think he's done a pretty daggum good job.
Well, And when you look at this, I remember the Jets game. You talked about the adjustments that they made when they that Dirk made when they switched Darrell Revis to Mike Walker,
mm-hmm.
and how they had to change some of the routes in motion and all kinds of things. I mean, it's
you,
not
you
like
know, you know what it's easier to call. I mean, you know what makes a great offensive coordinator?
Tom Brady,
a great quarterback. Okay, you know, so if you have a quarterback that's top notch and you have a running back that's top notch, what you have, boy, it makes it easier on a quarterback if the quarterback can do it. Is David that type of quarterback? No. I mean, he's not an elite quarterback.
Right.
Dirk Cutter could, boy, he could make some serious play calls if he had an elite quarterback. Now, can David be an elite quarterback? You know, I don't know. I mean, this is year three of him being the starter.
Plus, he's 32,
you know,
in February. How much time do you
but
have?
But at the same time, is David, is he terrible? No.
With a great defense and a strong running game, we saw how good he can be in 07. You know, look at the numbers.
Like I said before, as soon as you can get better at that position, you try to get better. And until then, you get better around him, and that's okay.
Appreciate the call, Lucas, 355-NFL1. Mark joins us from across the river in Arlington. Mark, welcome to the show. Happy New Year.
Hey, guys. Happy New Year to you. And obviously, our best to Vic. He's an important part of the fabric of the Jaguars here in Jacksonville.
No doubt.
You know, hoping we stay right here in Jacksonville and Vic here, is here for a long time. Anyway, two quick questions. Do you know what the Patriots did in terms of their practice? And secondly, I've been a 15-year season ticket holder, and Jack has given players off in front of almost every holiday, which I, you know, the humanity in me says that's what you should do, but Jeff, is that what's done in the NFL? Because they have been not engaged right after a holiday.
Well, let me say this. I don't know what the schedule's been for every holiday, okay? I don't know that.
I do.
But in the case of other coaches, every coach in the league makes adjustments for holidays to allow time people to spend their time where it's more important. I mean, let's face it. I mean, football's a game. And people that work regular jobs are no different. I mean, their schedule adjusts for the holidays too. But I don't know what the schedule has been every
They have
year.
Always practiced here on Thanksgiving Day and on Christmas Day, on Christmas Eve, on New Year's Eve, on New Year's Day. They've always practiced here on holidays. The only reason that they were able to take Christmas off the last 2 years was because they had a Thursday game against the Colts 10 days in advance of the following game. And so Jack adjusted the schedule to give his coaches primarily something that many of them have never had. He told me it had been 25 years since he had been home at Christmas. Now, you asked about the Patriots. The Patriots practiced. But remember, they had played on
Sunday game
against the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo.
And they had an abbreviated schedule that day.
An abbreviated schedule, which means you get in the morning, you're back in time for early.
Quick meeting, quick practice, go home.
Bang. But you got to get some time in to get it done. If the Jaguars had played on Sunday, they would have practiced on Friday. Guaranteed,
oh, yeah.
No questions asked. Jack tried to make the adjustment. Who knows whether he would do it again. They're 0-2 in the game following.
I can tell you this. That's not the reason why
they lost.
they got the doors blown off of them on Friday.
No.
Or on Sunday.
Tom Brady was magnificent. AFC Offensive Player of the Week. And the Jaguars, and I thought Jack made this point to his own defense the other night at his news conference. But at one point he had, and correct me if this is not asinine, to ask them to take on Tom Brady, but he had Jeremy Nevar and Chris Harrington as his defensive ends.
Who?
Yeah. He had Derek Cox, who's a rookie, even though he's talented.
He didn't play very well, by the way.
Oh, well, yeah. I remember seeing that. Tyron Brackenridge, who was claimed off waivers. Russell Allen, all on the field at the same time with William Middleton, lined up against Wes Welker, Randy Moss,
and Watson. And Rasheen is not anywhere near 100%.
And he didn't play in the second half. So, I mean, that's why he got beat. That's it.
Yeah.
Tom Brady was sensational. So I understand your point, but you know, you made a statement that I don't believe that you can back up, which is that Jack has always given players off time before the holiday. No, he's not. They've always practiced here. They've always
We talking
always
about practice?
Practiced here. Yeah.
We talking about practice.
And look, they practiced on Christmas Day, okay?
That's a little Philly flavor there for you, Joe.
In 2004. And they got the doors blown off them by the Texans the next day when Byron Leftwich suffered that concussion. They've always done it around here. Should they have? You can make the case that they should have taken the extra time to get ready for Tom Brady. You can make the case because they got beat 35-7. Mark, appreciate the phone call. Hope you have a happy new year. 355-NFL-1. We need a break. We'll take it now, and we'll return with Tony on the West Side and Ronnie in Orange Park after this on News Talk Radio, WOKB.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
And this portion of Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Justex Watches. Justex Watches are available exclusively at Espling Jewelers. We should read these together, all three of us.
I know the locations. Do you? Mandarin, the Fruit Cove, Southside, Ponte Vedra? I read that card for many, many years.
I know you did.
It's just interesting to hear you read it.
I typed it for you.
For many, many years. Brian Sexton back with Jeff Loggeman and Joe Fortunato on Jaguars This Week. Phone lines are lit up. They have been all night. So let's roll right along. We've got Steve in Arlington next. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Happy New Year to everybody.
And to you.
And hope that Vic gets better soon. He's sorely missed. My question is about the offensive line this year. My expectations, I guess, were for steady development on the offensive line all season. And at this point in the year, I was kind of hoping that they would be a more dominant unit than it appears to have happened this year. And I guess my question is, why hasn't that development happened, and what needs to happen in the offseason for that to get better?
Good question. Have they been terrible? No. They did have a Pro Bowl running back. So, I mean, you got to kind of take that into account. Is there room for improvement? Absolutely. Eugene Monroe, in my mind, has the biggest gap to make up to be where you want him to be. His pass protection has got to get to be better because that's what he was drafted as, having his strongest trait. I think Eben Britton is on his way. There's certainly room for him. I thought Uche Nwaneri had times that he really shined this year, and there were other times that he had a couple mental breakdowns. If he removes that part of his game, Uche is a fine football player. Vince has fallen off a little bit. Brad, you know, is Brad. He's been pretty consistent, but he hasn't been great. I give Gene Smith credit on this one, and that, you know, he has been very aggressive at that position in putting two rookies in. But you can't expect an offensive line with two rookies in the lineup to be dominant. Now, in years two and years three, can you expect that? Absolutely. But the hardest thing to find among offensive linemen is tackles, and I think you have two good ones whose futures are very bright. You can find guys to play in the inside.
And they'll be looking for more to make the competition stronger next year.
Oh, and probably one of the best blocking tight ends in the game in Mercedes Lewis. I mean, this is a guy that was drafted to be a receiving tight end, and he's turned out to be the, I don't want to say the second coming of Kyle Brady, but somewhere near his equal.
Yeah, he's pretty darn close.
So, time. It just takes time.
Appreciate the phone call, Steve.
Don't be surprised, though, in the future, you know, with Brad Meester getting long in tooth.
I was just about to say, I think that's got to be a key position they look at.
That you know, an Uche moves in the center or somebody moves in the center. He snapped a lot. I mean, last year, that was one of his primary backup spots. And in training camp, he was basically the second center. Right now, he's the backup center.
But you talk about the mental mistakes that he makes, the lapses.
Can't have that at center.
I was just about to say, because Brad makes all the calls.
Can't have that at center. But, I mean, it's a good, solid group. I think it's got good depth. And they've added a couple guys of late that I think that you know, give them good depth. But clearly, in this league, you got to have big guys. Unless you're dominant at the quarterback position, right, which you're not. So you want to make everything better around them, and I think they're on their way.
3-5.
Can't fix everything in 1 year.
No, you can't. 355-NFL-1. Let's grab, Tony on the west side. Tony, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Best wishes to Vic, and hope he gets well soon. A couple questions. First, 15 or 16 rookies plus first-year players on the roster. Can you ever remember that many on an established team?
I'm sure it's
not with an established team. Maybe an expansion team. I don't know how many we had in 95 or how many Carolina had in 95.
You had a bunch of starters. I mean, you had Tony Boselli at the end of the
year
starting. And Brian DeMarco was there.
Brian Schwartz.
Brian Schwartz, and you had James Stewart.
Four.
Yeah, so you had four rookies in 95, but it's not a common occurrence if that's what you're asking, Tony.
Hold on, we're going to get the mic level.
Or because, I mean, at one point in time, we had five rookies on the field on the offense and four on the defense.
Now, you've had at least 10 rookies active on game day since the early part of October. Now, I mean, your point is well taken. They are playing, and I just told you that against Tom Brady, you know, they were lining up with guys like William Middleton and Derek Cox and Terrence Knighton, although he's proven to be a very good player, Jeremy Navarre, Chris Harrington. That's been their story all year, but you know, I mean, they released all those veterans. They purged the roster in 1 year, 32 new faces. You realize there are 19 players. Besides the 16 rookies, there are 19 players who saw their first NFL action. Nate Hughes is one of them. And this week, you can make it 20 because you're going to have Zach Potter, the former Nebraska defensive end who's been converted to tight end, playing in place of Mercedes Lewis. So the number is just going to grow from here. It's not common, but there have been a number of expansion teams, Carolina, Jacksonville, Houston, Cleveland. So it's probably been done.
Well, with all that in mind, I hear everybody complaining about Jack Del Rio and the coaching staff, and to think that this team could finish 8-8 with a third of their roster being first-year players and rookies, these people got to get a grip, man. They've done an awesome job. As a matter of fact, I think the man should be up for Coach of the Year.
Well, and last week, Rick Gosselin, who is probably the number one, the top NFL writer, he works for the Dallas Morning News, wrote as much. He talked about what Jack has done here with all those rookie players. You know, of course, when they started talking about him as a Coach of the Year, you know, the team was 7-5 and had a couple of home games on the road to the playoffs, and so that's going to knock him backwards. But your point is well taken. For the Jaguars to be 8-8, big picture, based on what they've done,
if they get it, you're right.
I'm not assuming it at all. But if they could get to 8-8, it would be a major accomplishment for this team. Big picture, absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you guys very much. I really enjoy the show. I look forward to it every week. And you guys have a very happy New Year.
And
thank you, Tony.
We appreciate the phone call. We got time for at least one more call. Let's grab Steven, who joins us from the Ponte Vedra area. Hello, Steven. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hey, Steven, you're on the air.
Steve.
No, it's Susan.
Susan.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Susan.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No worries.
That's okay, guys. It's okay. Happy New Year, you guys.
And to you. What's going on?
And I was listening to Tony's comments, and I was going to reflect on that. And I agree. I mean, a whole bunch of us where we work, you know, we're diehard fans, and we always predicted 8-8. And even though I thought at first we might, you know, might do better, I think that the future looks good for this team. But what I was going to comment on was the thing that really gets us on Monday morning, especially when we lose, is it's not so much Dirt Cutter's play calling. I want to know what your comments are and what your thoughts on. It seems predictable. And that's the part that if we can predict it, then why can't the other defense predict it, you know? And it's just – and I think maybe certain plays that we don't see or use or – you know, I just want your comments on that and wonder why, you know, not – I wouldn't say trick plays, but more like, you know, why can't we just – you know, more play action. It's just somewhat really predictable. It's like, you know, 2nd and 8, and then here we go with Maurice Jones-Drew up the middle again. And that's just where I think we're all frustrated. We all still believe in David. I mean, he hasn't had, you know, he's had some up and down games, but you know, one got away from him. I don't necessarily think the Miami game was his fault, but you know,
Well, Susan, your first question about predictability is a good one, and let me tell you this one: when the Jaguars, they do something called self scouting, and with self scouting, what they do is they break down themselves based on personnel groupings, formations, and their own tendencies. And they look at that every week, because the last thing in the world that an offensive coordinator or a team wants to be is predictable. And so they look at that. But the reality of it is, too, is that the good teams do what they do.
The Colts. What was it that Smitty used to tell you?
He said that we know what they're going to do. We know exactly what they're going to do. It's just a matter of trying to stop it.
Right.
So is it predictable? I think every NFL team has their own personality, and they are predictable. The Colts, the Patriots, the San Diego Chargers, but it's the good ones that you can't stop.
How about the Packers in the 60s? Could you stop that running game? No. Mm-mm. Steelers in the 70s, could you stop Joe Montana? They ran the same plays, whether it was Ricky Waters catching the ball or whether it was Roger Craig. You couldn't stop them because they were that good.
Trust me, they're not as predictable as you think, because what they do is they dress things up sometimes. It may be the same type or same running play, but they'll give different looks to get to that running play. So it makes it difficult for defensive coordinators to know exactly what's coming. They have an idea.
Right.
But, hey, that's the way the league is.
Players, not plays. If you have the better players, any play will work.
If you try to be different every week, how good are you really going to be?
Did you know that they were throwing to Wes Welker? I mean, of course.
Absolutely.
You knew where it was going.
Absolutely.
It's just Tom Brady was throwing to Wes Welker. Folks, and Vic has said this for 15 years. Players, not plays. Time for news.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Hey, if you want all the inside information on the Jaguars, just log on to jaguars.com/connect. You can join the Jaguars Twitter and Facebook groups, just like Brian and Jeff.
Yeah.
When are you going to Twitter? I would love to see some of the things that you might Twitter during a game. Things you might say on the air that you can't because your microphone's not live.
I haven't seen the attraction of Twittering or anything like that yet.
I don't get it. I don't do it.
Yeah.
Vic doesn't really do it, does he? I mean, Ryan does it for him.
I don't know.
Huh.
But Vic blogs.
Vic's connected.
Well, the blogging thing, though, is just natural for Vic because he sits in the press box.
What's the difference between a blog and a Twitter anyway? It's all kind of the same thing.
Yeah, you're right.
About $40.
355-NFL-1.
What?
Don't go there with him. The $40 number is just random. It spurts out of his mouth all the time. Andy's in Arlington. Hello, Andy. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Good evening and happy holidays.
And to you, sir.
Hey, real quick for you. I got big ears and a big mouth, so I listen to and hear a lot of guys talk about quarterbacks. And something that came into my ears today kind of caught me off guard. We're looking at a lot of guys talking about quarterbacks in the NFL that can do short, medium, and long-range throwing to make their team extend the field. And someone mentioned Graham Harrell because he's up, I guess, in Toronto now with the Canadian Football League, and I guess his agent's been out sneaking and pooping around for him. And I wonder why the Jaguars wouldn't look at a quarterback like Graham Harrell, who's been found to be able to stretch the field so well and put him to use here in Jacksonville. David Garrard's a good quarterback, but I think the Jaguars could use a little more of a kick, and maybe he could add to that kick for us. And I'll hang up the phone if that's okay.
Well, real quick, before you go, did you watch Harrell when he played at Texas Tech?
Well, yeah, he did. He threw medium and long range pretty much, right?
Well, no, not really. He threw to Michael Crabtree, who caught the ball and ran with it afterwards. I mean, he was classic system quarterback. You know, they talked about Danny Werfel when he came out. They're talking about Tim Tebow as he's getting set to come into the NFL. Classic, same set. It was a system that they ran. Graham Harrell was evaluated by NFL scouts and personnel men, and they all looked at him, and none of them spent a draft pick on him. So, I you know, that happens where Tom Brady slides through, but Graham Harrell is not a strong-arm guy.
I didn't even know who he was.
Yeah, I mean, I watched him play because I'm a Big 12 guy. I will tell you this also. That doesn't mean that Gene Smith and Terry McDonough and their staff are not paying attention to him. In fact, I would guess they probably have evaluated him. They know everyone. Arena League, Indoor Football League, XFL, AFL, you name it, they know them. They are completely thorough, so rest in that. But Graham Harrell is not an NFL quarterback. So we'll leave it at that. Unless, okay, Loggy, you wanted to answer anything at all.
I don't know anything about him.
Okay. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351, Scott's in Mandarin. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, gentlemen?
Good.
A question I had for you, or maybe as much of a statement. It seems like we always get excessive play ever since the Jaguars have been in their maybe second, third, fourth year. We're going to lose them if the ticket sales don't pick up, and even more so lately. And I'm wondering if maybe the media isn't doing more harm than good by constantly playing up the story. Granted, it is maybe a news story to a point, but what motivation is it on a marketing standpoint to tell the people you're trying to sell a ticket to as a customer that we may not be here next year?
Okay, first
if
of all,
the story is constantly,
well, the Jaguars aren't writing that.
No, and the media is only reacting to the obvious, which is that the story is being told of a team, or not a team, of a stadium that's being built in an empty market with millions of people, and they're looking for a team, and they see the empty stadium here, so they write the story on a national basis. You can't control it. You just can't. But Wayne Weaver's not using it as a marketing tool.
No, and I'm not saying Wayne Weaver, but even the local media, it just seems like it gets way too much play, well, even from the standpoint almost like it's a threat.
Well, you can't control what they write, you know, Scott. I mean, that's kind of what it is. And the national media, I mean, everybody wants to have somebody to pick on.
We're the redheaded stepchild of the NFL.
And the reality of it is that this team led the league in blackouts.
Right.
So, you know, when there's the commissioner talking about London, when the commissioner has talked about the need to have a team in L.A., and when you have a team who's leading the league in blackouts, and, I mean, it's, you know, a lot of national writers and writers in other markets, I mean, they kind of go where the writing's on the wall.
Hey, and don't forget, it's not just tickets. There is a revenue gap between the big markets, the Washingtons, Philadelphia's, Dallas, and Jacksonville. Jacksonville does not have a name on the stadium. And if they did, they would hope to sell it for about $4 million a year. In Dallas, in places like New York, the numbers they're talking when the economy eventually comes around,
20, 25.
Yeah, 20, 25 million. You know, what Jacksonville can charge for a club seat, the amount that they can raise their ticket prices from year to year, is so far off of what those big markets are able to do. It's a huge gap. And so the people that write these stories, that talk about it, they're looking at the big picture, not just the blackouts. Hey, look, this has got to be the little engine that could. You're going to have to deal with it. We all do.
Scott, trust me, we don't want to talk about it.
Heck no.
I mean, heck, we've got family, homes here.
This is where we live.
this is our jobs.
And we have sons that we want to grow up with this team in this town.
I mean, we're all for it to stop. You know, but the reality of it is, until fans get, you know, tickets purchased, that's going to be a topic.
Until it becomes
right, well, I understand, like, even when a local guy could be a paper writer, TV writer, or talk, you know, reporter talks to him. It's always, and Wayne Weaver says he won't move the team, though. But it's always done like a negative feel or negative statement.
Now, Wayne gets plenty of press.
Wayne
gets plenty of opportunity to deny that, and they always run his soundbite and his quote. I think the media does a fair job with respect to the story. You know, it's not their job to do the positive spin. It's their job to present it and allow you to see it. And the fact of the matter is, if they put a positive spin on it all year long, they wouldn't have sold any tickets. Nobody would have felt the urge to come out to that Colts game, which, were you there? If you were, it was an amazing atmosphere.
It was great.
It was awesome. Right. It showed just how good this city can be. But if everybody had said, well, it's not that bad, don't worry about it, then no one would have shown up.
Scott, you know, I got an interesting piece of information, or I guess you could say a comment from a friend of mine the other day. And he said, you know, there's a petition going around about keeping the team here in Jacksonville. And he said, they got 100,000 signatures. You know what my comment to him was? Imagine if all those people bought a ticket.
Just one.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, that'd be a kind of a utopian way to do it. But, you know, the reality is it's probably not going to happen that way.
Well, we don't know.
But people need to be, you know, on a positive side, be motivated that we will always have a team. You know, we're not going to move. Things are going to get better. And try to put as positive a spin from the media standpoint as possible.
But you know what? If the Cleveland Browns, if the Cleveland Browns can leave Cleveland, and they did in 1995 at the end of that season, then you should never feel so secure in this day and age of modern professional sports that you're going to be able to do without it.
Anything can happen, but, you know, it's just, I think a lot of people have a hard time ponying up money maybe a year ahead of time for season tickets when we may not be here next year.
Well, Scott, that's a much more valid excuse than to blame it on the media. Just, I mean, don't blame it on the media.
No, I'm
blame
not it saying on the circumstances. It's on the media, but they just seem to, it's every night on the radio, on the print, you know, regular news, you hear it, you know, we're going to, L.A., somebody else is going to get the Jaguars.
Well,
we're going to lose them.
Turn it off.
Scott, it's there, and it's not going anywhere until this place is full and people are here and naming rights and everything else.
You can turn the TV off. You can put the newspaper down. Don't turn your radio off.
Okay.
All right. Well, we appreciate your phone call.
Okay.
355-NFL-1. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think you got to look at it for what it is. If they had 17,000 unsold tickets this year, you're going to have some attrition next year.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, that number is likely to be bigger. It's likely to be, I don't know, 20,000. They got a big job in front of them.
They do.
To sell those tickets. And whether you like the job that the local television, newspaper, radio have done, what they're doing is presenting to you the facts. And that is that this is a tenuous situation. Economy notwithstanding. Because, look, we've had this issue for years. It's not gone anywhere. When people had jobs.
No, and we don't want to talk about it here every Wednesday night.
No.
I mean.
In fact, we're going to end it here in the next 25 seconds.
You're getting me depressed here.
I'm sorry. I can't do without you. We have to do without Vic tonight. I don't need you suffering from anything.
My glass is half empty now.
All right. Well, somebody had to call up and be Vic. And Vic would have just accosted you, Scott. So you're lucky that you didn't have him here this evening. He would not like you blaming.
Boy, if he was here for that,
media.
Boy, his heart rate would have gotten up.
Good thing. He's probably at home, and if the radio is on, Bonnie's turning it off. Let's break. We have one more segment in this show, and we will come back. Calls have lit up. Hopefully, you're not calling to talk about Scott's topic. No offense, Scott. Happy New Year.
Welcome back to Jaguars This Week with Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman. Here's your chance to get free Jaguars merchandise. Just make JaguarsSearch.com your new online search engine. Every search is a chance to win digital dollars that can be redeemed for great prizes. It's just that easy. JaguarsSearch.com.
See how this works? One person calls and wants to talk about ticket issues, blackouts, moving to Los Angeles, and the phone lines erupt.
We're not going there.
So, Ruben on the north side, Bruce in Middleburg, Eric in Ponte Vedra. We can't. We just cannot do that tonight. You know, let's not have the last show.
Not going to have it. Yeah, just
be that way. So if you've got another thought, great. Otherwise, we'll move on and do something else. Meanwhile, Roger is up the road in Cherryville, North Carolina, and the perfect person to talk to about the pass rush, Roger, with Jeff.
Gentlemen, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I was just kind of wondering, number one, Jeff, do you think that we've got at least one piece of the puzzle on board already in terms of building a powerful pass rush? And number two, can you develop a pass rush between like this year and next year, or does it take longer than that to build up to the point where you can compete in the tournament at the end of the year?
Good question. And Roger, at Jaguars.com, I got the honor of filling Vic's keyboard today again. And instead of Ask Vic, it's Ask Vic / Jeff. And I addressed this with a couple answers. And it's an interesting thing because, you know, on Monday night's television show, Reggie Hayward sat in my seat. I sat in your seat.
Right. You did a good job, by the way.
Thank you. And Brent Martineau had asked a question about pass rush. And it was an interesting thing because I didn't really think about it, but I asked Reggie because, you know, I really believe that learning to rush the passer is like anything else in football or any other occupation that you have. Sometimes it takes a little while to learn your trade. And in Reggie's first year, he had one sack. In his second year in his NFL career, he had three. In his third year, he had 8.5. My first year, I had 4. My second year, I had 4. My third year, I had 10. Huh, ding, ding, right?
Derek Harvey,
Quentin Groves, okay. Now, I know Quentin Groves doesn't have a sack this year. I know Derek only has 2. But next year, I think, is going to be the year that we're going to know whether these guys can rush the passer. I don't believe that either one of them is a creator, okay? What I mean by creator. A creator is a guy who makes everybody else around them better, and I'm talking about pass rushing. If the Jaguars can find one creator or one disruptive force in the pass rush, then I think it'll make Derek Harvey and Quentin Groves be decent pass rushers. Do I believe that either one of those guys can be creators? No. But you got to have that one. And however you can find that one, boy, it makes everybody else around them better. But I thought, man, I was like, holy cow, Reggie, you only had 1.3 and then 8.5?
Right.
You know, same way with me, you know, 4.4, 10. So
he was the third-round pick also. You know, I think a lot of people get keyed in on the draft, and they think the Jaguars have to be in a position to draft someone in the first round. Well, I mean, they did that. It didn't pan out right away either. So there is hope for the Jaguars to find somebody, third round, fourth round, fifth round. You just got to develop them.
Well, I mean, you might be able to find it, you know, who knows where. But if you can get that one disruptive force, boy, does it make everybody else better. You just got to have that one. Genius. And if you don't have that one, you'd like to have a bunch of guys that ain't too bad.
That can rotate in. Have you seen anything from the other guys on the roster? I mean, is Julius Williams show you anything this year that makes you think he could develop?
He's got a long way to go.
That raw, huh?
He's got a long way to go. And then the new guys, Harrington, Navarre, you know, I haven't seen much of them. But
guys right now.
I saw Navarre in camp. He's got a long way to go. I think Terrence Knighton has some ability that he can develop into a good pass rusher on the inside. But really on the inside, there's really nobody else.
That's really been that.
John's what he is, yeah. Henderson. You know,
push the pocket, and if he gets there fast,
yeah, get a hand up every now and again. But John's one of those guys that what you'd like to do on third down is take him out, bring in a pass rusher. You know what I mean?
Right. Pass rush has been the big topic all year long about that defense.
It's their number one weakness.
Is it, or is tackling the weakness?
No, it's pass rush. I mean, I think they tackle good enough. I mean, it's amazing how much better you can be when. I mean, because think about pass rush. Leads to takeaways, it leads to third and longs, it leads to if you have a missed tackle on a third and eight and you miss that tackle at 2 yards down the field, the next guy comes in and makes it at five.
Right.
And you're off the field. It just makes you better in all areas.
Well, the reason
it's a passing league.
No, I agree. The rules are all there. It's all about
as Vic always says, it's a quarterback league.
But, you know, I asked Jack last week, I would assume, Jack, you're going to change your scheme against Tom Brady because last time it didn't work. And he said, we liked the scheme.
No, they changed it.
Oh, they did. Okay.
Yeah, they changed it.
But he said that the number one thing, the reason that they couldn't beat Tom Brady was that they didn't tackle.
With the scheme they implemented a couple years ago under Mike Smith,
right.
That's the reason it didn't work. They didn't tackle. In the scheme that they put in against Tom Brady, they got a little bit more aggressive, and they just – Tom Brady ate them up.
He said at his news conference on Monday they missed 14 tackles. In the ball game against the Patriots.
That's a lot.
So that's why I wonder if tackling.
Well, and I wonder how many that little guy that runs all over the field, Wes
Kevin
Welker.
Ball? Oh, Wes Welker.
Okay. How many he made happen?
He was unbelievable.
He's fantastic.
And he was a guy. You want to talk about developing late, fifth-round pick, punt return guy. Dolphins got rid of him. They traded him to a division rival. What does that say? That they traded him to a division rival.
They didn't think
rival.
Much of him.
Yeah, they couldn't have thought
they
much of him.
They didn't think that he was, you know, all that much, and probably a good trade for the Miami Dolphins.
And that's the best example, by the way, of players, not plays, because look at what he's become with Tom Brady.
Well, I think the ultimate factor in football is the play of the quarterback. You could have the best skill position players in the world. But if you have an elite quarterback, golly cow. Look at what the Colts did with Curtis Painter in the lineup. Yeah, I understand that Dallas Clark wasn't in there and you didn't have, you know, Reggie Wayne. But, hey, look, you take Peyton Manning and put him on a terrible team. Put him on the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah.
Put him on the Washington Redskins team. Ho, ho.
Well, look what he did with Pierre
Garçon. They'll be different.
And Austin Colley. I mean,
are they that good?
No.
No, it's Peyton Manning.
Yeah. Yeah, he is that good. So there you have it. Jaguars, Browns, Sunday afternoon. It's a 1 o'clock kick. We'll start with things at, Joe Fortunato, remind me, 10 a.m. Just went dark there mentally. 10 a.m. And then at noontime, we will have the pregame show.
You had a Lagerman moment.
That's
well, you're the
a
oldest
good way
one
to put
the
it.
Room.
That's a very good way to put
hair.
It. I'm not going to get mad at you, Joe.
How come I didn't have a Fortunato moment?
That'd be talking bad about myself.
That'd be a senior moment.
Oh, yeah. there you go.
See, I won't be mad at you.
You old man.
Jaguars and Browns. Browns are dead last in offense,
yeah.
Dead last in defense. People are going to look and go, Jaguars should win this game.
Yeah, and then let me throw out some numbers here because that's not the way to look at this game. To me, you got to look at this game as how a team has played of late. And the Browns have certainly not been a terrible team in the last three. They won them all. But in the last three games, they've rushed for 686 yards as an offense. That's pretty doggone good.
Yeah.
And let me throw out some defensive numbers for you. Because defensively, the Browns have been able to get after the quarterback and have an effect on opposing teams. Here's a couple of other defensive numbers. The Cleveland Browns in the last three games, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, and Oakland, I know they're not great teams, but they are NFL teams. In the last three games, the Cleveland defense has only allowed 10 of 40 on third down as a defense. They've sacked the quarterback 13 times. You think Matt Roth makes a difference?
Huge difference, especially considering they're playing without Sean Rogers.
And offensively, they have converted 17 of 45 as an offense.
So a little bit better than 35%.
Yeah. So if you're sitting there looking at the record and at the rankings going into this game and thinking, ah, easy game for the Jaguars, uh-uh.
Low scoring?
I think it's going to be low scoring.
Weather conditions are supposed to be windy, snowy, and bitter cold. So
let me throw you
running the ball would make
a few other numbers at you. Since December 13th, which is the last 3 weeks, the Cleveland Browns have had more yards per game than the Jacksonville Jaguars as an offense. They pumped out 349.5 yards a game.
And most of that's on the ground.
On the ground. And the Jaguars, 279.
Right.
Okay.
They put up 351 rushing yards in Kansas City a couple of weeks ago.
The Cleveland Browns in the last 3 weeks have scored more points per game than the Jaguars. In the last three games, the Cleveland Browns have rushed for more yards than the Jacksonville Jaguars. In fact, more than any team in the league. Total defense, they have been worse.
So what you're saying is, tune in.
Tune in. This is not a cake game now. This is a challenging game for a team that's won three of their last three against a team that has won three of their last three.
Tailgate show at 10, pregame at noon, kickoff at 1. Loggy, Joe, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And to all of you.
This has been Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station for Jaguars football, AM 690 and 106.5 FM. News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. WOKV AM Jacksonville, WOKV FM Ponte Vedra Beach, AM.